Good morning, everybody. This is Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer at Cantor Fitzgerald Managed ETF Portfolios. This is my weekly economic and market commentary for the week beginning today, Monday, April 8th, 2024. Of course, if you'd like more frequent updates, you can follow me on LinkedIn, Herb Morgan, or on X, that's at ETF_strategist. Presentation you are seeing and or hearing in the case of audio-only listeners has been prepared by Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors for use with both investors and their financial advisors. Of course, each are expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in the presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. Let's get into it. We had a mostly negative week last week. Nothing major, considering how much we've run up and how sort of elevated valuations have gotten in many of the equity markets. It's no surprise that we'd have a little bit of a pause and a pullback. S&P down a little less than 1%. Small and mid-cap stocks down quite a bit more. Developed international also down, but we eked out a small gain in emerging markets, led by about almost 1% gain in China. And if you know, we have been building for some time a position in Chinese equities in our portfolios. And we think we might be near that bottom where all of the bad news is priced in, markets have gotten reasonable, and there may be some positive news coming in the near term, in the near future. Fixed income was also down as inflation remained stubborn in the U.S. Interest rates went slightly higher, taking the aggregate bond index down about 1%. But as you all know, the elasticity of bonds is much greater further out on the maturity curve. So when you get to the 20-plus year Treasury index, you could see a big hit there, down about 3%, as the yield in the 10-year Treasury is moving closer and closer to a new cycle high, which would be around 4.5% if we were there. For those of you that missed out, last week we did a live economic and market commentary. It's also published on the YouTube channel, which is Slaying Bulls and Bears. But I'll give you a brief summary of some of the items that we covered. First of all, we talked about how did the economy get to where it is today? And we cited that the biggest contributor to where we are and what's happening today is probably the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. It inspired a major and significant growth cycle in the United States economy. We reduced corporate tax rates from 35 to 21%. This major change, this was the biggest change to the tax code really since the Tax Reform Act of 1986. We reduced individual rates. We increased standard deductions. There was things that actually made your taxes go up. If you lived in a place like California, your mortgage, the amount of mortgage interest that was deductible was limited to a $750,000 mortgage. Your state and local taxes became deductible only to the extent of the first $10,000. But for businesses, there was major, major, major beneficial things, such as 100% bonus deduction for business assets purchased through the end of 2022. Larger expensing provisions, et cetera. Then we were hit with an external or exogenous shock. That was COVID-19. State and local governments began to implement shutdowns to prevent the spread. And we manufactured the first ever supply side recession. Very strong demand, but limited supply. We've never done that in a recession before. U.S. travelers through the TSA checkpoints went from 2.3 million a day to a meager 146,000 a day. Schools closed. We all remember this. We know the story. But the key to understanding where we are today and how we got here was we had a booming economy that resulted from major tax overhaul and major tax change that was met with a complete shutdown of the supply side of the economy. We then provided stimulus to the economy. Now, providing stimulus to an economy when you're not allowing the supply, gives more demand in an economy, even more demand, but you had naturally occurring demand more than you needed, right? So if you add more demand via monetary stimulus or fiscal stimulus, put it in perspective, the stimulus amount was somewhere between $7 and $9 trillion from this very, very tiny supply side recession. Compare that to the global financial crisis, which was a which was an aggregate demand-side recession and a complete insolvency of all of the banks in the country, we stimulated $4 trillion, which was a massive number unheard of ever before. We essentially doubled or more than doubled that for this recession. There was just never a doubt that the economy would V in response and that it would create inflation. There was never a doubt that that wouldn't be the case from our perspective. Inflation surged. We had been hovering along down here less than 2%, all the way up to nearly 6% annualized inflation rate. What contributed? Massive fiscal stimulus, massive monetary stimulus, supply restrictions. And now what's happening now, of course, is we are continuing the fiscal stimulus by deficit spending the annual budget of the United States government. Typically, we used to run deficits in the 2% range. We had this privilege because of our status as the world's reserve currency and our trade deficits that we carry on a regular basis. But now we've taken that to a new level. In a time of a strong economy with virtually no unemployment, we're at 3.8% unemployment, we are running a 6% fiscal deficit that is major stimulative and major inflationary. And so this last leg of trying to bring down core PCE inflation, we've gotten to sub 3%, but the Fed's target is 2. And if you ask me and you want to define price stability, why is it defined stability defined as 2? That's inflation. Wouldn't stability be better defined as 1, 1.5, 0, where your currency maintains its value all the time? And we don't have to worry about everything going up every year and trying to find ways to pay for it. Well, that's where we are. We are in an inflation era. We are at a risk of inflation reaccelerating. Yet there's all these major positive things still going on because the demand side of the economy naturally, that's naturally X the government deficit finance demand, the naturally occurring demand that resulted from the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, which is still in place, is quite strong. Let's move on and talk about some of the economic data. Last week, we got a lot of data. It was the first week of a quarter, right? The April quarter, the S&P Global Manufacturing PMI. Now, remember, manufacturing below 50 is in contraction. And we've been there for some time. And when we started calling for recession back around here, when everybody was calling for recession, we thought the manufacturing sector, 15% of the economy, would pull the services sector into recession. It didn't. In fact, manufacturing has now turned around, third consecutive month of expansion by this measurement, and the highest level of output since May of 2022. We also got the same manufacturing reading from ISM, or Institute for Supply Management. And guess what? That also went above 50 in the month of March. It beat every single estimate of every single economist who reported into Bloomberg, where you get that consensus estimate. Nobody had it turning positive. So this was a reacceleration of manufacturing sector of the economy, a reacceleration of growth when inflation is still well above the Fed's target. This begs the question, how could the Fed possibly be considering a rate cut while unemployment is low, weekly jobless claims are low, manufacturing and service sector is expanding? Speaking of the services sector, the S&P U.S. services sector came in right in line with expectations. Expansion, 51.7. The ISM reading of the services sector said it came in at 51.4. That was a little below expectations. Now, this is where you get the inflationary pressure. You see it's cooling. You see how we're coming down? That's true. But we can't underestimate that there's still a massive amount of monetary stimulus. Now, the Fed has raised interest rates. We talked about in the report last week that the interest rate hikes are not having the intended effect because people stabilized their balance sheets for a long time while interest rates were near zero. That's number one. And number two, so did corporations. So we're not having the effect. The other part of the monetary stimulus that they printed $5 trillion, now they've taken out about $1.5 trillion. But there's still 3.5 more than we had prior to COVID. So there's still a lot of money floating around in the system. We got a report on construction spending down 0.3%. The estimate was for an increase. This is back-to-back months. You can see it right there, back-to-back month-to-month decline in construction spending. Not really ready to worry yet. You can see we get that all the time. So not that big of a deal. Factory orders for February were up 1.4%. That beat estimates. Durable goods backing out transportation were up 0.3%. A little bit below the estimate of 0.5%. Not a big deal. Automobile sales came in for the month of March at around 15.5 million. A little bit below estimate, but you can see we're hovering at this 15.5 to 16 million range. Prior to COVID, prior to that recession, we were much higher, 16, 17 million. Part of that is automobiles are lasting quite a bit longer than they used to be. Part of that now is since interest rates are higher, there's less of an interest of consumers to take on a new auto loan. It was really easy to go out and buy a new car when interest rates were 0.9 or 0 or 1.2, but now interest rates are real. And you think about the cost versus the cost of repairing and maintaining a vehicle, and American consumers are just keeping their vehicles longer, and that's probably a good thing. Weekly initial claims for unemployment, which is the bellwether for the direction of the economy. It's real time. Every week we get a number here, and when the number is below 300,000, which you can see, I'm going to draw it way up here, it's a pretty healthy jobs market. We have 350 million people in the country. We have a very large labor force. I think it's about 170. I may be off a little bit on that number, but this number is low. It did spike a little bit last week. Okay, we got to 221. If we start to see this number spike further, and if it gets close up to 280, 290, then you can say the economy is likely slowing. Then you can say the jobs market is cooling. Then you can say it'll bring down inflationary pressures, and then the Federal Reserve would consider interest rate cuts. I believe that the talk of cuts right now is still premature, and I don't think that the Fed really has any major intention of cutting. I think they're prepared to cut, but having the intent of cutting while inflation is still well above target doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Staying on the theme of employment and jobs, the ADP, Automatic Data Processing, payroll company that many of us used for our paychecks, they said the economy in March added 184,000 jobs. That was above the estimate of 150, and they revised up the February number to 155 from 140,000. We also got the Bureau of Labor Statistics non-farm payrolls report. We haven't had a number since that. That's 303. You're going way back. We had 303 in March. The estimate was for 214. Absolutely blew it out of the water. But the labor force is expanding, so unemployment rate stayed, didn't go down, 3.8. And look at average hourly earnings, up 4% year over year. Yes, that's inflationary, but it also raises the standard of living of hourly workers. And that is the true promise of capitalism. That is the true promise of what the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017 was supposed to do. Yes, it lowered corporate tax rates. Yes, it incentivized investment and capital expense. But it was always thought and believed and known that in the end, it would raise wages for American workers, and more importantly, real wages for American workers, driving up their standard of living, their ability to consume and travel and educate and entertain and do all the things that we would hope for. This is the promise of capitalism. It's lifting, the less wealthy up. And, the debate in our country centers around many other things. Okay, staying again on the jobs thing, the JOLTS report, blue line here, job openings, about 9 million. It's called 8.8 million job openings, down from 12, reduction in inflationary pressures, but still far exceed the number of unemployed or marginally employed workers in the labor force. 8.8 is more than 6.4. Demand exceeds supply. Econ 1, prices go up, wages going up. We just saw that in the last slide. Consumer credit for the month of March rose $14 billion. Consumers are still happy and strong. So what's next? We move right into earnings season this week. And consensus forward 12 months earnings estimates for the S&P 500 are at an all-time high, pushing up to $250 a share for the blended forward 12 months estimate. Why? I think it has a lot to do with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, as I've mentioned, which significantly incentivized corporate investment, reduced the cost of success. The corporate tax rate went from 35 to 21%. Corporate balance sheets are incredibly strong. The earnings on cash balances are positive. Debt was issued back when interest rates were near zero for an extended period. And that money, much of it sitting in cash, is earning 4-4.5% on the biggest tech company balance sheets. As an example, one of the reasons we've run up and valuations have gotten high is the productivity gains that are being expected to come from investments in artificial intelligence. Those investments benefit tech companies disproportionately, but ultimately it filters back through other companies as well, the traditional brick and mortar, et cetera, whether it's financial services, whether it's consumer, all will benefit in the future from their investments in AI and artificial intelligence right now. This week, economic data is a little light, but we're, as I mentioned earlier, getting into earnings season. Let me start with some key earnings this week. Delta Airlines, Fastenal, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, BlackRock, State Street, Citi, Schwab, and Goldman Sachs all report this week. Traditionally, these are the first companies that report. It's big financial companies, Delta Airlines and Fastenal. It's just the way it is. Then we're going to move in on Tuesday. We'll get NFIB Small Business Optimism. We've got the key reports this week are CPI for March and PPI for March. And you can see the PPI is getting closer to the Fed's objective, right? But the CPI is still stubbornly high and needs to come down. Minutes from last month's Fed meeting, Michigan sentiment, and the that's a typo from last week. Don't worry about that March unemployment rate. That was last week. Okay, moving along, we talk about thanking you for tuning in. The name of this presentation is Slaying Bulls and Bears. We try to make the complex and complicated simple and sensical. You can find us on all your formats, but the best place to go is to the YouTube channel because you get these beautiful slides and graphs. Thanks, everybody.